All right, if I could have everyone's attention, please. I'd like to welcome you all to the July 2006 Trilog meeting, Trilog Linux Users Group. Our pizza is actually here on time today, so if I could have a show of hands for those people who are here for the very first time. Well, we have a lot of first-timers. That is so wonderful to see. All of the first-timers, please, you guys are first in line to grab some pizza, so run. And then everyone else will please follow them. And you thought I was joking. All right, I think now that everybody is more or less fed and watered, couple of brief announcements. First off, I'd like to give a warm welcome back to Rick DeNatale, who was back from heart surgery. Glad to see that he's feeling better and back on his feet. And, of course, he's right on top of all of his steering committee duties. Very, very glad to see that, Rick. I was just informed that today is Embrace Your Geekness Day. I guess I'm only a nerd or a dork or a spaz. I didn't know about the geek thing. Obviously everyone here is embracing their geekness, so I'm very glad to see that. I think we all deserve a round of applause for ourselves for embracing our own geekness. All right, so if you haven't done it today, you're going to have to hurry up or wait until next year. And I don't know if I can wait that long to embrace. Let's do a little have a job, need a job fun and game, shall we? It's a tradition that we do at every meeting. If anyone is looking for work, looking for a job, now is a good opportunity to raise your hand if you'd like to say a couple words and introduce yourself to the group.
Hi, my name is Matt. I just moved here. I sent a message to the mailing list. I'm looking for a job. Done hosting, done networking, done lots of support type stuff. If anyone interested, I'll be here.
All right, anyone else? Got a hand in the back.
Derek Lane. I do sort of support of a large website for EPA. I do support of a large website of EPA. Last month I said EPA was feeling a little iffy and moving in a different direction. They apparently have repented big time of that. Nevertheless, I have not. So if anybody needs somebody who's knows how to keep large websites from falling off, database and all that kind of stuff. You know.
All right, anybody else like to say a few words? Okay, flip side of the coin. Anybody know of a job or have a job that would like to say something? David, you're standing up.
Yeah, I work at Copernicus Group IRB. We're in Cary, a local company. We're looking for a director infrastructure manager for our IT to take us from small size corporations up to mid-level size. This includes everything from Active Directory, Linux, document management, digital fax. You name it, we're looking for a hands-on manager.
But you will have Dave working for you, so consider yourself warned. Okay, anybody else have to say anything? Tanner?
There's a company in Morrisville called Taproot Systems that is apparently looking for some embedded software or embedded Linux software engineers. Google them there. It's listed on their page.
All right, good tip. Anyone else? Okay, with that lead-in, actually, we are fortunate to have a meeting sponsor tonight. CTG is a local IT and other stuff recruiting firm. And Dawn Borden is going to say a few words. Let's give her a round of applause and thank her for buying us dinner tonight. All right, Dawn.
Hello. I first of all, I'd like to thank everyone for allowing us to come out and sponsor tonight's meeting. I've got two local team members with me, Joe Gray, right over here, is a big, tall football player guy, and Don Cipriani in the back. And they are actually going to have a list of our openings with them tonight. So if any of you are looking for work or are interested in inquiring about any positions that CTG has open, they'll have a list of openings and can talk with you about them. Just to kind of give you a little history on our company, we are an IT consulting firm located here in Raleigh. We have been in business now for over right at 40 years. We hit our 40th birthday this year. And we have grown to approximately 700 consultants here in the local Triangle area. So we are one of the largest IT consulting firms in the area. And we offer full benefits, medical, dental, vision, stock purchase plan, vacation, holidays, a great PC purchase program, tuition reimbursement, the whole nine yards. All of our benefits kick in day one. And we have a, we get opportunities in every day. We service some of the largest IT clients here in the Triangle. So again, you know, if you're interested or are in the market for a new job or just want to inquire, feel free to touch base with Joe or Don. We do have some brochures in the back that, we'll actually walk and talk you through CTG and some of the programs that we offer. As well as some wonderful pins and letter openers and some little giveaways. So feel free to take those home. But again, I just want to thank each and every one of you for allowing us to come out and sponsor tonight's meeting. And if there's anything we can do for you, let us know. Thank you.
Thanks, Dawn. Again, we're very grateful to have a sponsor tonight. We don't have a sponsor every month. So just to build, help us build up a little rainy day fund, if you have a dollar or two and would like to throw it in the donation box in the rear of the room, that'd be very much appreciated. Does anyone else have any announcements they'd like to make before we get started tonight? All right. Let me turn the floor over to Jason Van Gumpster, and who is going to be talking about Blender and all the neat, wonderful, lovely things that it can do. So.
It's all yours.
Ha-ha. I gotta figure out how to clip this on. It's science. Let's see if I can put this right. Aha.
Hello?
Awesome.
That's too dark, just right?
This may or may not hear me, but I'm pretty loud, so this may or may not be necessary. I'm pretty informal about this, so if you guys have any questions in the midst of me talking, just raise your hand or probably shout because it'll be easier for me to hear or see you. How many people here are actually familiar with Blender and what it is and what it does and any of that stuff? Excellent! That means I get to learn you all on some stuff. Blender originally started as an in-house development tool for a Dutch advertising and production company called Neo Geo. It started in 1988. It was originally written for IRIX on SGI boxes. And what happened is within about 10 years, Neo Geo became one of the largest and best production companies in the Netherlands, partially due to this tool. One of the cool things about that is that they also, around 97, started letting the public use it for free here and there. And they put it on their website, and it was actually really cool. With the user base growing like that, the guy that wrote Blender, his name is Ton Rosendahl, and he split it off and created another company called Not a Number to further the development of Blender and try and market it as a for real product. And that was in 1998. And within 1999, they went to SIGGRAPH, they had a big demo, everybody loved their stuff, and they got a lot of money from the European Union to really, really try and invigorate Blender's development and make it go further. Now, Blender itself is a 3D modeling and animation suite, which means you can create 3D models of things, move them around in 3D space, render them out, and create animations and movies. That was a primary use for it. They're using it to create animated logos for television commercials and similar things like that. Well, with Blender being used as a commercial product, by 2000, let me make sure I have that number right, by 2000 they had 250,000 users. for the application that were registered with it. Beyond that, they're not 100% sure. And that's also around the same time they released Blender 2.0, which had an integrated game engine, which was one of the nice little features they added into there. And so with the good demo they had at the SIGGRAPH and the money from the European Union to push it forward, they really, really started pushing more and more into Blender. However, that was around the nice time of economic joy, in the most hyperbolic sense of the term, and not a number couldn't materialize a profit from Blender. And late 2001, early 2002, not a number went bankrupt, and all of the IP, including Blender, got wrapped up into a holding company. Now, the next thing that happened, which is still boggles my mind and is super cool, basically, Ton was able to negotiate a deal with a holding company to say he had 6 months to raise 100,000 euro. And if the community could raise 100,000 euro, then they would be able to buy the source and they would be able to do whatever they wanted with it, the idea being to release it. The community was able to raise that money in 7 weeks.
Whoa.
We wanted it bad. and so, October 13th, 2002, Blender goes open source. It's released under, it's a joint release, GPL and the Blender public license, managed by the Blender Foundation, who's Ton Rosendahl, still the guy that manages all of that in Amsterdam. Since 2002, let me double check that. Since 2002, there have been numerous additions to Blender's code base and features. It's insane. Stuff that, I thought I'd never see in Blender, or fluid simulation got thrown into Blender just last year during a Google Summer of Code. And, lost my train of thought. Aha. One of the biggest complaints people have always had about Blender is its interface, because it's non-standard. There aren't very many applications you see in the world where you right-click to select. It's one of the biggest things. Now, after it opened source, one of the first things they did, they gave you the option to switch it to left-click, which really made things nicer for some people, but for those of us who have been using it for a while, we didn't care so much. So that's basically the background behind Blender. And as it's grown and as it's had more and more features added to it, especially in the last 3 years, the humorous part about all of it is it's still small. The download for it, I just downloaded it, takes maybe a minute on a high-speed connection. It's like 2 megs. It's nothing. And I'm going to show you some work that was done in it, and it's amazing to see what can come out of that, especially considering stuff like four to seven DVDs you get with Maya and some of the other applications. The stuff that you can do in Blender with that and the fact that it's free is incredible. So what happened, the next thing that happened is Blender's development had been going forward for about those 2 or 3 years since 2002. We've been getting more and more features. The bright idea came up then, again, from Ton, was that we want to push the development even further. And one of the things that you find out, because Blender was an internal tool, you find out that when the programmer can sit there right across from a table and talk to an artist, and the artist says, I need X, I need Y, I need this thing to happen. Then the programmer goes, they code it, like good little programmers. Don't hit me, guys. They make the feature, they make it happen, and the artist is happy, and they get this really cool product, and they get to make whatever the client needs to make. So the idea came up of, let's make a project. We're going to call it Project Orange. And we're going to make a 3D movie. This is going to have two purposes. One purpose, make Blender's development grow and skyrocket. We're going to add more and more features to it and really, really test the application, see what it can do. The other part is to prove to the people who would rather spend $6,000 on Maya that you can create quality work with open source software like Blender and the GIMP and make things like that happen. So in order to do this, we had another money-raising fiasco of funness. Great vocabulary today. Which basically meant, in order to produce this movie, they needed to get 150,000 euro. That was what they needed to do. 6 months prior to even starting the project, they sold DVD pre-releases, pre-sales. With 1,000 pre-sales, they rose half the money. Basic rule of thumb for Holland, at least, is that if you can raise half the money, then through grants and subsidies and provisions from outside companies and foundations, the other half can be raised. So they got 75,000 euro. European Union and like three other foundations actually pitched in the other half, and they got to start this movie September of last year. 7 months later, which is 1 month longer than they wanted to take on it, but 7 months later, they have an 11-minute short called Elephant's Dream. And a bevy of new features for Blender, which they rewrote the animation background. They didn't have a compositor. For those of you that know, a compositor basically, it's a node-based system where you have your graphics come in, and you want to be able to adjust part of your image in a layer. You want to adjust the background and blur the background, but you want the foreground to stay solid. But you don't want to render it that way because it takes forever to try and do that in 3D. So what you do is you render out two passes, have the compositing nodes blur one part of it because it still has knowledge of the 3D data, and then smack it together and do like that. They didn't have one of those when they started the project. They do now, and it's in Blender. That's just part of the stuff that got added in there. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to show you the results of that 7 months of what happened in there. The way they went about doing this was really interesting. About this time last year, maybe about a month earlier, they put a call out to the community. The Blender community, as you can see from the money they were able to raise just to get this movie and actually get the source back, very, very resilient and very, very, very active about the program. We love it. So they put a call out saying, who wants to make a movie? And they got tons and tons of response from that, and they picked the 6 best people out of the community who had actually done projects with the program before to produce this movie. I, unfortunately, was not one of them. I tried, but there were 6 guys that are really, really excellent. They're really good, and you'll see their work. And they came to Amsterdam, set them in a room for 7 months, and they produced this. So I'll stop talking for a second here. Is there a power button on this? This one. Hello? Yeah. Yes. Ha! It works. That's Blender. These are all the wonderful open source projects that helped make it. There's about a lot of them. The other cool thing about it, you'll see in a few seconds. See all those really small names there? That's the first 1,000 people who bought the DVD to help finance this movie. Yeah. There's a lot of them. Those are the funds that match the other half. Now, most of you are probably saying, what did I just watch? Which is a perfectly valid and accurate response. It's a, for those, you know, usually it's one of those things, because it's so short, you end up having to watch it a couple times to actually get the gist of it. And a lot of, I don't know if you guys have seen a lot of animated shorts, this is sort of the norm for that. So it's, they weren't aiming to make anything on the, story-wise as accessible as, say, something like something that would come out of Pixar. It's a lot shorter, they don't have the time for that sort of development, and they're really arty guys. But let me show you one of the really cool things about an open source project like this is the fact that when you put a call out to the community for translations and subtitles, you get 2 pages worth. That's about 30, I believe it's 30 different languages this movie has been translated into. Yeah, that was quite an excellent little thing. The community helped out a whole lot with it. And, right. I don't believe they do, but maybe, you know, if you'd like, you can submit a translation for it. I'm sure they'll take it. But that's also one of the very cool aspects about all of that. Now, the gist of the movie is this. Two guys trapped in a machine, one's trying to convince the other of the existence of a reality that he sees, the other one sort of following along in the beginning and pretty much doesn't really want to play the same game at the end of it, and so there's violence and conflict that ensues. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. Everything that Emo sees, everything that you see is stuff that Prug sees. Everything that you don't see is what Emo sees, because Emo doesn't see any of that, because he doesn't want to. That's the gist of the entire animation. Now, this was created over the course of seven months. A couple other notes about this. When they started it, and you might be able to tell a little bit, they didn't have a script, which is a pretty big no-no. So they developed a script in the midst of producing this movie, which if they would like to do an Orange 2, and in that case, they would probably have a script ready ahead of time. One of the things I also got tired of was actually hearing Emo's name. It was a lot. But on the plus side, all of the visuals for this movie were created using open source software, predominantly Blender and the GIMP. You saw there's also Verse, Inkscape. They also included, I think they were using KDE on the workstations they were using, and they were using Subversion for controlling the revisions on the actual blend files that they were working on, which was a pretty clever way of doing it. And they have a whole listing about it on the blog. You had a question? This can be used instead of Flash. Outputting to a Flash movie, however, is still one of those things that's a little hairy. What you would usually do, you can output to a sequence of still images, targets or pings, and then you can either pull that into Flash and punch it out of there, or run Mincoder, punch it out through that way. There is a script, a Python script that's integrated. One of the cool features about Blender is that it has Python integrated into it. Pretty sweet. You can actually add a lot more features to it that way. There is a script called Flender, I think is what it's called, which will output an SWF file. But it only works on a couple versions back, so the guy who was coding it kind of dropped off the face of the earth for a bit. So, but yes, you can, for the most part. But yeah, Blender was a predominant tool. When they were making this, just to give you an idea, one, they didn't have a script, and two, they didn't have a compositor, like I said. Tom wrote that in the midst of it. He also rewrote the animation code for most of the application for doing that. And there's a whole ton of other stuff that came out of it. You saw that the hair that was on there, particle hair, was not in Blender until this project came together. And the hair, I think it looks pretty good. There's some control issues when you're trying to actually model and use it, but for the output of here, it actually looks really, really, really well and fit the application. They also had assistance from the community. All the textures, a large portion of the textures, they had a project blog set up, and they put a call out and said, "We need textures. Anybody can bring textures to it, hook us up, and you'll get also in the credits and get help that way," which they got a lot of help from the community for that. A lot of times they jumped on IRC and asked for someone to, "Could you model something for me real quick?" Now, the one thing that wasn't done with an open source application on this was the audio. They contracted that out to a guy named Jan Morgenstern, I believe that's the way you pronounce it, and he actually did that in his studio and provided the Orange Project with the sound for it. Hopefully, in future projects, that might change and be one of those things I suggested. But for something that happened by a team of six people in the course of 7 months, I can't complain too much. One of the other things, is there any other questions real quick before I go on to anything else on this? Sweet. Trying to go through here. The other really cool aspect about this, which I failed to mention at the beginning, and I apologize, is that this was released as and billed as the first open movie. What does that mean? This is a DVD. On the DVD is two discs. One's in TSC, one's PAL. But also on those discs are all of the production files used to create the movie. All of the blends, all of their failed attempts at creating models, all of their animatics, all of their textures, even the sound that was produced, all of the voice stuff, that's on these DVDs. So, if you guys didn't like the movie, you're more than welcome to make it yourself. So, you can't say that about very many movies, which is really, really excellent. So, I'm going to show you a couple things from that, actually. I'll get out of this. That'll work. Hide everything.
So what kind of machine or machines did they use to render
them? They actually, I didn't show that on the credits there, that they actually had, who asked that? So I can talk. Oh, yeah. There you go. They actually had University, I think it was in Colorado, had a large render farm that they shipped the files to, and I think there were a couple hundred nodes on it that they were able to spit that out. So they were able to spit it out at HD resolution, which is even cooler. And so printed the film and have all the good funness that comes with that. Hide others. All right. So on the DVD here is a nice little folder called Orange, amongst everything else. And as you can see, there's an animatic they weren't very fond of, which they named the Crappymatic, and they actually have the development version of Blender that they were using and developing as they made the program, or I made the movie, right there on it, so that you can actually use what they were using, because it wasn't the release version. There were extra features that were thrown into it as well. All of their post-production stuff, documentation they made for it, pre-production, even the teaser they made for it, which is actually pretty sweet. And the entire blog, which they posted all their information about that for. In the production area, actually, I pulled this to here because it would be easier. Let me minimize you. A mouse, my kingdom for a mouse. This is the latest development version of Blender, which will run these files just fine. Let's do this. Aha! You are a god and a saint and all those other fantastic, beautiful things.
And a geek!
And a geek! But I will not embrace you because that would be odd. So, let's go to our... now where was the desktop on this thing? Actually, I think it was right there. So, here's one of the files before they get into the elevator. Hopefully it opens it. Oh, there it goes. Where you can actually see this wonderful interface, and they actually use a text editor in there for the actual script, which you can see up in here. Close your eyes, why thou good. All that lovely text. But, as you can see, pretty clearly, they have the full 3D model here for when they just get launched up in the air. Actually, I just probably did something bad. Zoom's not working here. Sorry. Which I can easily fix this by just reloading it. If it doesn't weep again. Don't weep. All right. But as you can see, the point of this was illustrating the fact that you could actually open this up, and if your machine wanted to play nice, you could actually go through and set this is the timeline right here where you can see where different cool things are happening. I mean, you got a camera view on camera 13, which is not seeing anything particularly interesting at this moment in time. But, so yeah, you can show, it will show you all of the wonderful, cool things that are built in. If you wanted to edit the movie, adjust the movie, change the movie, give a different dialogue that doesn't say emo 47 times in the movie, then you could, you can, and you are encouraged to. There've already been at least two remixes where they took the actual footage and put it to music and changed the movie around a little bit. And they're actually pretty humorous to look at. Characters are fully licensable if you wanted to make a commercial and have Prug advocate your magical reality pill. You could do it. But going into that, I just realized you guys have no idea who I am. Let me go back to where I should have began. My name is Gru. Actually, my name is Jason Van Gumster, but most people call me Gru. I'm from Richmond, Virginia, and I have a small animation and print design company that I run there. And most of the work that I do, animation-wise, is done through Blender and predominantly open-source software. I'll use Blender, Cinelera, Kino, the GIMP, Inkscape, and, of course, Linux, as they're my mainstays. I haven't quite convinced the other two guys in the company that it's a good idea, but I'm working on them. And I'm as you may have noticed, I'm an active member of the Blender community and really, 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 really like the software and the stuff that it can do. That's me. And I'll show you a little bit of my work in a second. But, yes, what came out of this particular project was, like I said, all of the changes and additions to the animation, code in the program. They got the particle hair. They got the node-based compositor. They also got a really cool implementation of a vector blur. Blender, up until this project started, the way that it implemented a blur was really, it was a hack. Basically, what it would do is it would take the scene, and you have a keyframe here and a keyframe there, and it would render out a sampling between 5 and 16 of different frames between these two keyframes. And then it would blur them together to make it sort of look like a motion blur. What it ended up looking a lot like a lot of the time is mouse trails when you do that. It could be useful for some things, especially in television, because television is a low enough resolution where you can't really notice that stuff. You can get motion blur from interlacing in television. But for larger projects like film and stuff like that, it gets a little bit more difficult. So what happened is they implemented a vector blur when they did these compositing nodes. And from what I understand, it's implemented in a pretty unique way. Essentially, they take the image that was generated from 3D data, and then regenerate new 3D data based on that, because Blender handles 3D data pretty well. So it takes your pixels and essentially, based on, I don't understand half of it, but takes the pixels and essentially creates more 3D data out of that, making each pixel a cube, and then moves those cubes and creates a vector blur based on that. No other application that we know of actually does it this way, but the results are pretty good. So we can't complain. And it renders very fast, a lot faster than rendering 16 samples between keyframes, which was quite a bear if you do any animation. You don't want to, if you're rendering two keyframes, you'd rather render two keyframes and not 16 of them. So, let me do a quick, since we're in the DVD showing mood, I can show you some of my stuff. My company's name is Hand Turkey Studios. How many people know what a hand turkey is? A hand turkey. Exactly! That's a hand turkey. That is exactly what a hand turkey is. However, you may notice if you ever see this, we don't have hand turkeys on our logo. We have a sheep with a Salvador Dali mustache and a black eye. I could give a nice artistic explanation as to why that is, but essentially, we thought it was funny, and we're sticking to that. Let me eject this from somewhere. Come to me, DVD. And we'll just pop this in here. And this will autofill, I hope. I'm making your laptop cry, man. I'm sorry. I apologize for having not my own laptop. It decided to blow up 2 days ago and make my life miserable. HP! Hold on a second, let me... That was actually quite excellent. Alright, let's do that again. I can't win! Go away. Not a Mac guy. I have a little bit of an absurdist sense of humor. Some of the stuff, I'll give you a little bit longer versions of some of the stuff that's in there. No, that was... That's actually the thing about these guys and machine... No, that was actually just my demo reel. I should have mentioned that ahead of time. Here's something actually I just recently finished off. This was actually done in Blender, and I think it's cool. That is a character that we like to refer to lovingly as the Magic Man. He's either a lot better than he thinks he is, or he's a lot worse than he thinks he is. We haven't quite decided yet. It's one of those things we're going to keep doing serially. This is the first one we did with him. The other one's a lot simpler. Get a kick out of it. There's history there, I'll tell you. The history behind that was actually originally a community project in the Blender community, and what had happened is they had this whole basic simple joke, and community is great, except they get a little excited about things, so from this joke they decided they were going to model the entire kitchen, and the cook, and the knives, and the pots, and the pans, and the sink, and outside, and needless to say, the project stagnated. I had storyboarded it out, but I didn't have nearly as much detail in it as they wanted, I suppose. And, well, basically, it was one of those things that I thought the joke was funny enough that it should be made anyway. That's why it's the son of the Muffin Project as opposed to the original Muffin Project. As far as the title goes on that. Only if the Muffin Man can. I don't have a good response to that. And then, Blender, this is some of the sort of the meat and potatoes that Blender can also be done used with. You know, originally it was used in simple animations like this, which is pretty straightforward. Just and then the show is supposed to start, and then the show got canceled. You may not know, I'm a retired Mexican wrestler. Long story behind that. It started off as a joke, and then it became serious. And they're known as the Richmond Lucha Libre now. I'm retired. And we made an animated logo for them for their DVDs. Which the audio was recorded from one of their real shows, and they did get hit a lot with garbage cans. How many of you guys are familiar with the Firefox Flicks contest that recently ended? Excellent. For you too. For those of you that weren't aware, the Firefox, Mozilla put together a competition called the Firefox Flicks competition in which it was a competition you make a 30-second commercial, to advocate Firefox. And we submitted something for it. The first half of it, since we do print design and animation, the first half of it is actually done hand-drawn illustration stuff. But we ended up animating and modeling a full model of the Firefox logo, and we put it into this spot. And that's who I am. Will Juicer was not my idea. The idea came from somebody else in the studio. Yes. I won't take credit for that, although I probably should because it's really funny. let's eject that. Oh, come back here. Does it eject? It does. Oh, that would make more sense. As you may notice, I'm not a Mac man. I might. Say that again? What, Blender? I can't hear who said that. Ah, again. Yes, Blender will run on anything that supports OpenGL. The actual interface is written in OpenGL. They have a library they call Ghost. And it was originally, like I said, originally written for Irix machines. It runs on, still runs on that. It runs on Windows, runs on Mac OS, runs on Linux. During that a number, and recently they restarted the project, they got Blender running on an iPad. Wouldn't recommend trying to render on that, but it's good for showing stuff off. Yes. A bit of a cluster of iPads. The reason I'm actually in Raleigh, that's just crazy talk. Yes. The reason I'm actually in Raleigh, there's Red Hat put on a thing for rising 8th and 9th graders called Red Hat High to show them about technology and audio and video and all sorts of really cool stuff. And I'm one of the three guys that are in town to teach them Blender. And we decided, me and the other two guys who only met through the forums and community up until this point. We decided that we're going to try and do a small project while we're here. These are the fruits of said labor. Hopefully I'll run in DLC, and I won't make your machine cry too much again. It's not nearly complete yet. Should have mentioned, again, one of those things I should have mentioned at the beginning. That's more or less a... I got to work on that, don't I? That's one of the... The idea behind that one is there's a real bird, more or less a real bird, comes and lands and talks and meets a toy bird, which doesn't do much of anything, so he tries to introduce himself. Toy bird says nothing, and he says more vigorously, "Hey!" And the toy bird, of course, is rude and doesn't respond, so he pushes the toy bird, which is made of springs, and pushes back and knocks him over. That's the idea of the short, and we're going to finish that animation and actually give it, put it on a CD and put the blend files on the CD for the kids to use. But that's where we're at on that one right now. I just figured I'd show it off because I was having a lot of fun making it. But that's the cool thing about setting up teams with Blender too, is that everybody, because the community has, since this program became open source in 2002 and before that as well, the community has actually grown and matured with the program. Because the program's free, the majority of the community actually is in the, usually from about 16 to 25 is your average user, because it's free and they have access and they have the free time to play with it. And what's happened is from that point in 2002 and since actually before that when it was released, you can see that the work of the community has actually grown and matured with it. And so what happens is when you have growth and maturity, people start specializing, and I am an animator. I'm not so much as I'm a passable modeler, but I'm a stronger animator. Of the two other guys that came down, one's really good at modeling organic things, like a bird, and he actually modeled that in about an hour, which is incredible, blew my mind. The other guy's good at what's called hard body modeling, which is buildings, edifices, which is redundant, vehicles, that sort of thing, and as well as a little toy bird, and he modeled that, and so between the three of us, we were able to show that we can actually do that sort of work really quickly, and the community has actually matured to the point where you have that sort of specialization, and you can start building teams with these people to do this. You couldn't do that a couple years ago because everyone was still becoming familiar with the application.
Are there actually any large
motion picture producing software? I believe, not for final work, no. Spider-Man 2's pre-visualization was done with Blender. Pre-visualization basically means there was one guy who was given the script and the storyboard, which was made, and he took that information, brought it into Blender, because Blender's really fast for working, and once you get the knack of its particular idiosyncrasies, it's really, really speedy for workflow, because it was part of an internal, it was an internal program for that. So it was built for speed, not necessarily for learning. Once you get it, it's fast. So this guy actually got it and was really fast in it and did a number of pre-visualized scenes for Spider-Man 2, which actually ended up, they used his animations and processes to actually build the actual movie. So I thought that was pretty awesome. So yes, sort of. What else we have here? So I'm going to talk also a little quick spell. The Blender Foundation has also gotten, with its development and because it's gotten, as an open source project, it actually has benefited from things like the Google Summer of Code. Last summer, we got such cool things like fluid simulation, which you saw in the Son of the Muffin project. That was all done in Blender. That was all fully simulated and rendered and done in Blender. You have a domain. You have an object. You say, this is a liquid. This is an obstacle. Make them and have fun. And it does it. It's magic to me, but it's awesome. It did what I needed it to do. And actually recently, initially when it was coded for the Summer of Code, it would only allow static obstacles. Now, the guy that was working on it is still working on it, which is even cooler, and now you have moving obstacles which will play with it and will start doing other really cool things with it. One of the other benefits of that last year's Summer of Code was what's called the modifier stack, which I can show you actually real quick. Do I have a copy of Blender still open? Come here. Yes. Which one are you? Oh, there we go. The modifier stack. One of the cool things about Blender that a lot of other, I should probably mention this, one of the cool things about Blender that a lot of other applications have started to adopt is non-overlapping windows. It's speedy for workflow and it makes things work really well. So none of these work panels actually overlap, but it's fully malleable. If I want to put a separate, if I want to take this one out, it's a matter of going join, done. And I want to put one on the side. I can split it, put it there, and say I want this to be, where's my, the buttons window. And I want it to be vertical. And now I have a whole other layout that works well for speedy things, such as working with modifiers, which it's a modifier stack, so it's stacked vertically, so having this sort of layout actually is quite helpful. So going into, the cool thing is also, for small resolution, because Blender is open source and because it runs on just about anything, you have situations where your panel header doesn't quite fit for small resolutions. The solution for that is draggable, come here, middle click doesn't work, draggable headers. You just pull them to the side, left and right, which is really, really excellent. And so I was looking for my edit buttons, which is right here. Also, because all of Blender is OpenGL, you can do cool things like move the widgets around. And if I can actually... a widget cube? Eventually. If you want to decode it, yes, you can. But you can also, if I could get the middle mouse button to play nice with me, you can actually do things like zoom in on this whole block here as well. I think I can do it by going one of these. Oh, there's the tabs. Go back together. All right, at any rate, this is the modifier stack right here. And what that does is before you were able to, when you were working in Blender, if you wanted to add something to the mesh, a lot of the times your changes were destructive, which means you wouldn't have the original smaller mesh that you could edit and play around with. You'd have to make your more complex mesh before you could go any further. The modifier stack allows you to do cool things like add a whole bunch of them, like subsurface, which basically takes the entire thing and creates subdivision surfaces for it, which means every face is subdivided, but not destructively, so I can always go back and hide it and add it, and I can stack these together, so I can not only do that, but I can also add a wave to it, which it's hard to see in a sphere or a cube. But let me get the widget off here. Also, these widgets, which is right here, were also added before the Summer of Code. The cool thing about these widgets is that you can move and grab them along here and move them along different planes. They actually make editing for people who haven't messed with Blender before a lot more simple, because you can use your transform widget to move stuff. You also have a rotation widget to rotate things, and you have a scale widget to scale them. And you can do it independent on independent axes or on only two, on a full plane. Also, up until after it was open source, Blender did not have an undo. Save early, save often, something I still do. It'll learn you good the first time you lose data. but Blender now has undo on multiple different levels. And it makes things a lot nicer. But you can also show multiple widgets at the same time. So I can show scale, transform, and rotate all together, which makes it pretty fun for that. But what I was trying to do was get them out of the way. See that moving and undulating there? That's basically the wave modifier doing that. And if I want, I can take it off, and it's done. I can take that off, or I can just not see it. It can just be the cube. But it's still there, if I want it to be, and I can take it off. That's one of the cool things that was added last year's Summer of Code. The other thing, where did we go? Before Tom got his hands dirty actually recoding the front end of the animation for all the tools for the animators to use for Project Orange, one of the other Summer of Code projects was actually
refactoring the back end of it so that all these new little features and stuff could be added. For instance, in Blender, I'm going to set up something really quick here. All right. You can set it up where we have a mesh cylinder. Oops, let me start that again. There we go. 32 vertices will work out. Okay. So you have your little mesh there, and we want to select these and extrude them down on the normal, and say take these and extrude them opposite directions, like that. So we have this cool little setup here. Now, what Blender does, what you can do is you can add an animation system to this where if we go into one of these views, function key one, actually, I'll do it this way, I'll make it faster. All of Blender's preferences, because there's no overlapping windows, all the preferences are actually hidden in the header menu. So you just go in here, and I actually want to, this is also where you can change it from left mouse to right mouse select. I still like right mouse. I would like to emulate my numpad because I'm on a laptop. So, now we're in this view here. We want to add an armature to this, which basically an armature, the easy explanation for an armature is a skeleton that goes along with the mesh to control it. So if you have an arm, it's a two-bone armature that you can bend, and if my skin's the mesh, then you assign the vertices to that and you move it around. So based on that, you get these cool little things. Let's add the armature. There's the bone there. Now, before in Blender, if you had to look in shaded mode, you'd see that, which doesn't help you a whole lot because your armature bone is right there. So what they've added is an ability to X-ray so you can see it through it. And they gave different views for it. But let's hold on a second and grab these up. So I want to pull this, in the Z direction. Why are you doing that? Z. There we go. And I want to grab that, pull it down in the Z direction there, take that, extrude it, and I have another bone. So I have a, I have a two-bone rig right here. And this is actually set up pretty close to the way I want it to be, where I have the joint right where the joint's supposed to be there. Now, what you can do is take this and you can have multiple view modes. One of the things is if you wanted to rig this up originally before the animation code refactor, you would have to say, you would have to what's called weight paint the vertices to the armature, which means you would take whatever vertices are set here and say, these vertices are assigned to this bone at a value from 0 to 1. So I want them all the way dedicated to this bone, I set it at 1. If I want them halfway dedicated, I set it at 2.5. If I don't want them dedicated at all, I set it to 0. You'd have to go in for large meshes and basically set each vertex and decide what vertex goes with which bone. Very time-consuming, and very tedious. So what you would do, what they added, is this cool little thing called envelopes, which you end up having bones that look like that. And when you go into edit mode, they have spheres of influence. So this alpha area is basically that any vertex that lands in that space is going to be influenced by that bone. I don't have to worry about painting vertices at all now. Now, granted, you have more control when you paint vertices, and you eventually want to do that for some more complex rigs. But if you're doing something simple like giving a demo to some really nice people, this works great. So you see this, I'm going to increase my little sphere of influence here a little bit on these. And now I go into what's known as pose mode, tab, and now you can see the influence the bone has, and when it rotates, now it doesn't do a whole lot, but that's because we haven't used our handy dandy modifier stack. So we just add a armature modifier. Name of the object in this case is just going to be armature, which one of the other nice features that they added in Blender is tab completion. Yes. So I can tab complete and get the name of the right armature, in which case, and I select whether I want vertex group or envelopes. I don't have any vertex groups, so I'm not worried about that. Envelopes is selected. I should be pretty ready to go. And I am. And that's really a quick way to set up a quick and dirty rig. Like if you wanted to do pre-visualization for a big movie and had to get it done in a week, this would be a good way to do it. So this is one of the things that wasn't pre-existing in Blender that came with the Google Summer of Code. Oh, yes. Well, yeah, you can actually bake your envelope's influence onto it. Yes, you can, which is also very excellent. So it gives you a good starting point for that. What it used to do would do something similar to that. You would say you would parent your mesh to the armature and say select the closest vertices and hope it works out good, which obviously it didn't always work out quite as good as you wanted it to. But with this, it's pretty fail-safe and works out really well. So that was one of the additions to the Summer of Code. This year, yes?
How good is Blender support for motion capture devices?
Motion capture devices, it won't support the device itself. There have been experimentations with the BVH files that get generated by these devices, and I've seen a couple animations. They treat it as an import. They use Python, write an importer script, and from what I've seen, a lot of them work really, really well. I personally haven't ever played with them. I don't have the equipment or the files myself to play with it, but I see the results, and they're actually pretty nice. But they're also, this is also information that's set up on a rig. I'd like to see somebody actually put that rig on a mesh and watch it move around. That'd be one of the things I'd be looking forward to see. Quite good, actually. 3D Studio Max actually has a couple different importers in Blender, all, again, loaded up through scripts. I think we have the scripts actually on here. If you go in and say import, these are just some of them. There's actually a whole lot more. But, I mean, we've got 3D Studio, AutoCAD, Collada, some of these I don't even, you can export and import DirectX, Google Map models, modding for video games, paths. I think they had C for a while there, but I don't think they know anymore. You can set up, you can actually also export paths for SVG or EPS or PostScript files. All that stuff can be put in and out. Now, some of it, because it's some of the file formats are difficult to get access to, like I believe XSI's formats are kind of difficult to play with, but they are definitely working on that. The other half of that is Blender has gotten, as a benefit from what it's doing, better UV mapping tools. UV mapping is the process where you put a texture on a mesh so it actually looks like something and not just something that's colored and looks like plastic. And so UV mapping is basically just like mapping on a globe. You flatten out the mesh and you paint in the mapping. Before in Blender, it was a real, real pain to try and do any of that. The tools for that have gotten a lot better. So good, in fact, that a lot of professionals are actually taking their models that they make in Maya or ZBrush or Silo or any of these things, and they're importing them into Blender just for the UV mapper, which recently came out last year also. The LSCM algorithm came from grad student's research, and they actually implemented it in Blender just like the fluid simulator. And because it's actually gotten so good and gotten a lot better, Blender's pretty much top of its game there. So there's a lot more importing and exporting happening because it's good at that. Did I answer your question? Excellent. That's one of the things they're really, really trying to play more with. Blender right now has two renderers that it plays really, really nice with. Itself, the internal renderer, and Yafre. Now, there are exporters as well built in that will go out to Sunflow, Pavray, or POVray, and they're working on a RenderMan export. The problem is that RenderMan has programmable shaders, which Blender doesn't support right now. that's one of the things down the road that they really want to add. They did, Blender does now support GLFL shaders in the game engine, but that doesn't help those of us in the animation side of things very much. Train of thought. Yes. So, part of the stuff that, yes, sorry.
Two questions. What's the
Google Map? I'm not sure, but I'm guessing. My guess is it's from Google World. Yeah. I believe so, yes. I'm not as versed in that as I probably should be, but yes. And the other thing?
And the second question was, as far as the rendering goes, the rendering is farmed out, and so in the local engine, is it using a CPU, or are they doing stuff that's using the graphics engine?
It's all processor-based right now. There's most renderers actually right now still talk straight to the processor. They don't use the video card for that unless they're doing real-time rendering. There are a couple projects underway to try and take more advantage of that, in both commercial software and on Blender, but headway on that is slow. So. Physics chips? Not that I know of. I know with the game engine that Blender has in it, there is physics support through a couple engines. The one they just actually updated was a Bullet. They have three engines that they've been playing with. Bullet, Sumo, which are two that were actually used to play with Blender a whole lot better before, and they're really well integrated. And they actually started playing as well to get it to work with ODE, the Open Dynamics engine. And the cool thing about that is, even though that's mainly a game engine sort of thing, you can actually bake those animations, bake that physics simulation to an animation and use that for the animation side of things, which looks really nice for guys like me that don't want to animate 100 blocks falling down at the same time. Yes?
If you're not at all familiar with this type of software,
there was, yes. As far as Blender goes, there was, the last book that came out for Blender was for Blender 2.3, which was quite some time ago. The problem with doing, especially with something like Blender that developed so quickly, the problem with doing printed documentation for it is that by the time the book comes out, there's already about 15 other features that have been added to the program, and some of them involve usability. So, but Blender has a very, very in-depth wiki as far as all their updated information goes for that. There's also, they have a wiki book called the Blender Noob to Pro. It's in Wikibooks, I believe, that is probably one of the best references for those people who are trying to get involved with learning. Now, are you talking on the art side of things or on the code side of things? Just using the application, the Blender Noob to Pro, if you Google for that, you'll find it. It's probably the best reference you can get right now for that. The other, outside of that, there's the Blender documentation on, it's wiki.blender.org, or MediaWiki, one of those two, and the community. Community is probably the best reference for most of the stuff, because there's tons of stuff coming out, new updates and features, and the people who have been playing with it are actually pretty active in the community. So you can go on and say, all right, we just got fluid simulation. How does this work at all? And there's going to be at least one guy that says, all right, we'll do this, that, and the other, and it will help you out. Also, they're very active on IRC as well for doing that. So you can actually get pretty prompt responses as well. Anybody else have any questions? I like questions. Yes. I still say it. Yes, it's Blender has a very, I would say, very steep learning curve. It's steeper for somebody who has experience in another 3D modeling application because they have some preconceived notions of how things are supposed to work, and Blender has its own way. But that said, getting into 3D for anybody, you're going to say crap a lot anyway. And that should answer your question. Yes?
Yeah, what's the user interface itself code in? I mean, is it entirely OpenGL based?
It's entirely OpenGL based. It's programmed in C. Parts of the game engine are done in C++. And like I said, a lot of the importers and additional scripts for helping with animation and modeling are done in Python. Sweet. What I was going to get to next is this year's Summer of Code, they actually get some other really cool features. Who here is familiar with ZBrush? All right, good. then I can diss it and you guys won't get too mad at me. ZBrush is a commercial program. Basically, you have, it's a whole different sort of way of modeling. Essentially, you take your mesh and you have a brush and you paint on it, whether you want a texture here, don't want a texture there. It's a lot like sculpting. You push things in and out and it's very, very malleable. The downside of that, of course, is that if you're doing animation, what's called the edge flow, the way the vertices lay on the mesh isn't necessarily clean, but it's good for getting an idea out and good for doing stills. So that's a very cool technology, very cool program. It's proprietary. There's also an open source program called SharpConstruct, which runs in Windows and Linux, and I believe also Mac OS, and does essentially the same thing. The guy that's developed that has come on for the Google Summer of Code for Blender to implement SharpConstruct's features into Blender, which is going to be very, very cool, because then we have that sort of functionality and features in the program. That's one of the things that we're getting. We're also going to be getting a sky generator, because right now in Blender, if you were to try and put a sky on it, you go into the materials and world settings, and you have blue, you have gradients that you can set up here through colors. You could also set some stars in there and do some other cool stuff, but it ends up looking a lot like... that. It hurts my brain. But yeah, you can put stars and stuff on it. And usually if you want to put a world texture on there, you're typically going to want to put a texture map, which is something you're going to photograph outside and then put on in there. But if you want to have that all generated in Blender, say you don't have a digital camera or you're one of those people that likes to stay inside a lot, then... then the sky generator comes in handy for that sort of thing. Plus, there's also a lot more control on that. You don't have to wait for the clouds to come in just the right way and the sun to be just the other right. You're not a photographer. You're a 3D modeler, and you want to be spending your time doing that. So that's coming up. Also, FFmpeg, I think that's how you pronounce it. If I'm wrong, you guys please correct me. Integration, FFmpeg. It's very cool. I like it. The integration for that coming in Blender is also coming, which means before we had that, or before we're getting that, if you want to render an animation in Blender, there's a couple ways to do it. You can spit out a AVI of some sort, or whatever your OS will support, or you can spit in, which is not really good for Linux users because, well, I mean, you only have a couple options coming out of there. Just natively coming from Blender. Or you can spit out a sequence of stills, import that into your favorite video editing program, and mix audio with it and go from there. One of the other side of things you can do, Blender will load audio. Load audio just fine, and you can edit full movies, which they did. All of the editing, by the way, for Elephant's Dream was done in Blender. It has a sequence editor, so you can do video editing in it. Pretty sweet. But the downside is that when you export it, it exports the audio and video in separate tracks. They won't do it as a merged track. FFmpeg support's going to fix that, so that's one fewer step for those of us who actually use the program for this sort of thing. Also, there are things that were not included in the Summer of Code, and a lot of us are a little bit disappointed with that. Fortunately, many of the developers are actually still going to do it, which is very awesome. One of those things which got put on hold is the GUI refactor. There's always been issue and complaints about Blender and its GUI, how it's not friendly or it's not standard or those sort of things, which get tiresome and really pedantic arguments about people's preferences. But to make it easier for people who are getting involved with Blender and getting used to it, and also to increase workflow, they're actually refactoring parts of the GUI to make it easier to use and faster to use. One of the things they're actually looking into doing is radial menus. Now, part of the reason this part of the project was actually started last year, but it got put on hold because the main guy leading it got into Project Orange.
So he decided he's going to head to work on the animation. But now that Orange is over, he's actually doing a whole lot of stuff, like including working on radial menus, also an event, the events refactoring on it, which means that you can have customizable hotkeys. Blender is very, 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 very hotkey dependent. So if you need to move something or grab something or stretch something, chances are good that you're going to find it on the keypad, not on the mouse, and not on the menu. They fixed that mostly. You can go into the menu and you can find more things more easily, but it's still faster to go through the keyboard. So anybody using Blender and most 3D apps, you just see one hand on the keyboard, one hand on the mouse, and the left hand is going to be a lot more busy, typically. But one of the complaints that people have had with Blender is that, you know, if you're familiar with Maya, or you're familiar with Softimage, or Lightwave, or any of those other applications, you're used to a certain set of hotkeys. And you can't customize those on Blender right now. But with the events refactor, that's one of the things they're planning on being able to do with that, to make those people happy. And for people with, say, for instance, different keyboard layouts. For instance, the default move tool for hotkey for Blender is G for grab. But grab and G is only in English, so makes more sense in other languages for other people. Or if you've got a Dvorak layout, your hands are going all crazy trying to get to this key where it translates on the other side, and it's a little bit different. So, well, there is that argument, but yeah. There are going to be some further render enhancements, including fixes and additions to the Blender internal renderer. Since it was open source, it got ray tracing built into it. Up until that point, it was just a scanline renderer, which you could get some pretty good results out of, but reflections, transparency, all sorts of cool glass sort of things were a real pain to try and get that to work out. Those things were added into it, and there are more and more of those things being added to it as well, in the coming year. The node compositor, like I said, was also added. Nodes were also implemented. Let me just show that to you, because it's really, really awesome. They nicknamed it Noodles, because people like to sit with it and just move stuff around. The node editor. You can actually use the node editor. Actually, let me show my material as well. Split area. 3D. And this is, I love the fact that I can split this thing around. It's very, very fun. The node editor, you can actually use for two things. You can use it for compositing, which I already explained, hopefully adequately. If I haven't, yell at me. You can also use it for materials. Materials on Blender have always been, up to this point, pretty kind of weird. You have to go through, select your object, select my, if I can get to it, there it is. Select my object, add a new material, and from there, you can get it to look like that. One of the other cool little things that Blender started getting was different ways to preview this. Before, we'd preview in this really weird, hacked out, kind of, sort of, what it's going to look like way. Now, that's actually what it's supposed to look like at the end of the day when you finish it. Also, let me introduce you to a new person here. Her name is Suzanne. She's a monkey. This is, if you're familiar with 3D graphics, there's a standard sort of 3D mesh and model that you use for testing stuff that's more complex than a cube or a sphere, like the Stanford Bunny, or Stanford Teacup, and then the other one's the bunny. But Blender, they're like the monkey. So, but that's also an easier way to show other cool things, like the modifier stack, if you want to do... Where did it go? Oh, yeah. Subsurf. Sit smooth. So now we have a nicer monkey, a non-cubic monkey. And so we have our monkey, and we want to add a material to her. So we add our new material, which is right there. But we want to use our nodes. So now we have cool little nodes here. And you have your material node set up looking the way it can look. And the cool thing about using Suzanne as a test is actually get the preview to show her. but the cool thing is you can add in all sorts of different inputs and textures and geometries
and changes to it. So if I just wanted to add an RGB curve to her, take the output, drag the color, pull it here, just connect the network, which I can, again, since Blender's OpenGL, I can zoom and scale just about anything. If I want to change my contrast, give her some more red, and maybe make her look a little bit like that, and still want to go here. That's a really, really hot pink we gave her. Let's pull her down this way. So we have this color for her, and there's the output. And it's a whole lot easier than going through here and saying, all right, I want to move my sliders left and right, how I want it to end up being. You just punch the nodes out, and it can get a lot more complex and add stuff to it when you add things to it. Render. One of the other cool things is render in Blender is F12, but sometimes you... I still got the background. Monkeys in space! but this is one of the things that was actually really added, and they're adding more and more to this. This is actually only right now in the development version of Blender, which they're on release candidate 3, so hopefully in the next week or so we're going to see a new version of Blender with all of the stuff that actually those of us who have been using the development version for a while have been able to play with, albeit a little buggy here and there, but it works out. The other thing that was supposed to be in the Google Summer of Code that unfortunately was not was voxels. How many people know what voxels are? Good, because I only have a rough understanding myself. From what I understand, voxels are more or less sort of a volumetric sort of pixel. So it's a good way of implementing smoke, fluid dynamics, clouds, all these other really things that you would try and hack with a particle, with particles and particle effects. You can really do a lot better and look a lot better and move a lot better with physics with voxels. Fortunately, the guy is still developing this, even though he didn't get in the Summer of Code. I also, like I said, Blender has a sequence editor. One of the cool things you can do with Blender is since you can readjust the way things look and are laid out, you can actually have preset screens. So you have one for modeling, you have one for animation, or you have your timeline lined up. One of the ones you do have is the sequence editor. This is Blender's video editor, which saw a whole lot of development thanks to Project Orange, and even more development as we keep going forward. There was a guy back there that asked about other full projects. There are definitely 3, maybe 4 independent projects that are going on using Blender. Two of them that I know of are film projects. One of them is a full-length animation being done in Brazil, I think, called Plumiferos, which involves birds and motion. It's very, very awesome. If you guys get a chance to check it out, it's Plumiferos. The guys who are developing are really, really awesome doing that. And they're doing a full-length animation with that, and it's looking very well from the production shots that I've seen so far. But this sequence editor, basically, if you've ever done any video editing, you can do a whole lot more of that. One of the things that was actually added to this, let me add a header here. One of the things they've actually added in here was a... Let me pull you down. Oh, wait, there it is. Vectorscopes, which I can't show you a whole... Well, actually, here's what we'll do. If I do... when we did this, that Firefox commercial, I opened the elevator one, didn't I? When we file open, that's the one I want. This is actually that Firefox model from that animation that I had shown you on my demo reel a little bit earlier. We actually did model the Firefox going around here. But the reason I'm showing you this is that in the sequence editor, if I were to load this up and add a scene,
Give it a second. The biggest help is RAM. RAM is probably the biggest thing. RAM and processing power. You can never have enough. The more the better. I actually typically run around about a gig on my machines. I could use more, but for doing stuff that I output, that's usually television resolution, a gig does more than enough. I have one of the other guys that's actually in town. He does a lot more print stuff and renders at higher resolutions. He actually recently finished a render where he used three different machines to render it, and all the machines were pushing over a gig and a half of memory usage while rendering. Actually, here's a strip. No, it's going to try and render it, isn't it? it was going to be cool. But what I was showing you is it'll show what they recently added to the sequence editor were vector scopes and a luminoscope. So you can actually see how the color and contrast and light's going to be. It's a very useful tool for video editors. And you didn't have that because also thanks to that now you can actually do color adjustments and sweetening in the sequencer, which you couldn't do before, which is also a nice feature that they've added to it. That about, unless this comes up and plays nice, that about covers most of what I was going to go over. Anybody have any questions for me or about Blender or any of that other wonderful, excellent things? Yes? Importing PowerPoint files, I'm pretty sure you can do it. I know it'll output it. There's a script that a guy wrote called PavAnim that will definitely output it. I'm fairly certain you can import it. If this wasn't thinking, I'd check it out. But I'm pretty sure that that's possible, yes.
That's a little hard because PowerPoint files, it's really a program.
Right. Well, yes. The issue is that it's usually not too much of an issue because, again, it's parsing it with Python, so it should be able to read it, translate it to the data that we need it to be in Blender. As long as there are things that correlate with it in Blender, it's not a big deal. Yes. A spinning character. Something fairly simple you can probably get done. There's a gingerbread tutorial that is supposed to take half an hour. One of the guys in the studio, when he was starting to learn Blender, it took him about a day, but that's because he was only doing it a couple minutes here and there. But depending on how you go with it, you can probably pick up the basics in Blender and you know, about an evening. You pick up the basics in it, how the interface works, how to grab, how to move, how to go through. You realize that you're going to have to use your hotkeys a lot, and you're never going to be able to sit down and blend like this, unfortunately. So getting that sort of notion down will probably take you a night. Mastering it, I'm still trying to play with mastering it. I get what I can out of it, and I learn a new thing every day when I play with it. To get something where you have, well, here's an example. We're teaching these rising 8th and 9th grade kids. You're talking between 12 and 15 years old. The other two guys that were working, being modelers, they weren't expecting them to get very far beyond modeling in the 15 hours this week. There's one kid that built this rocket ship that's launching in the air, and it's got particles shooting out of the back of it, and it's blowing up, and it has the stars, because it's a rocket ship from space. And he did it in the course of yesterday and today. 3 hours each day, so 6 hours altogether, he was able to do it. And, you know, he's a really bright kid, but I'm pretty sure you can figure it out, too. Yes? Pre-made blend files. If you go to blenderartists.org, that's the official, unofficial Blender community, there are community journals on there where there are tutorials, video tutorials, and other sorts of tutorials. Those will come with blend files often. You'll also end up seeing a lot of posts on the forum where someone says, hey, free blend! Also, check out the release notes for Blender. They give a lot of testing blends that they do with that. there are model repositories, some of the commercial model repositories. I believe some of those carry blend files. I personally don't use them, so I'm not 100% sure, but I know other people have. Anybody else raising their hand? Because I can't see. Hey, it loaded it. what I was trying to show was adding a header. This is the vector scope. So it shows basically an image of, let me zoom this out. Basically how it fits in the color gamut. And I'm pretty well balanced on that one shot towards the red because, well, the Firefox is red and orange and those colors. And of course the globe's got some of the blue. That's why it goes across that diagonal. And then the other view that they added to it, which is really, really helpful, is the luminal waveform, which basically shows how much light between, contrast from white to black. So this is going to be the black and the top is the white because I use a full white background. That's why it maxes out up there. Usually for television, what you want to do is be 10% inside of that. I was kind of bad on that one. I apologize. I'm sorry. From a television standpoint, televisions aren't really designed to go all white or all black, so it tends to give your, when you, older televisions at least, CRTs and whatnot, new televisions don't have this problem as much, but the idea is that if it punches all the way black or punches all the way white, it makes the gun work harder than it's supposed to, and you end up sometimes getting a shimmer, and it doesn't look right on the screen, so they usually try and keep you within 10%. It's a rule of thumb sort of thing, not really hard and fast. You're not going to blow up anything if you go that far out. Awesome. Well, I'll get you later.
All right. Many thanks to Jason. I appreciate him coming out. Thanks all for coming out to our meeting.